of something. How much was the issue and the subject of the trial? Under pressure from the judge originally assigned to the case, Sandy Litvak and Katzenberg's attorney, Bert Fields, had negotiated a settlement in 1997 in which Disney agreed to pay Katzenberg $117 million, which Disney insisted was all that it owed. Katzenberg maintained that the company owed him more, plus interest. Disney and Katzenberg would have a trial before an arbitrator to determine the total. The settlement itself was a major breakthrough, given the stubbornness with which Eisner held to the view that Katzenberg had forfeited his bonus by leaving early. No doubt Eisner genuinely believed this. Perhaps Wells had told him this in order to mask his own mistake in granting Katzenberg such an open-ended bonus. The bonus concept had been Wells's idea in the first place, negotiated in a bungalow at the Beverly Hills Hotel as an annuity for Katzenberg's twins. No one had expected it to amount to much, but that's hardly an excuse for such a vague, poorly drafted, potentially limitless liability that Wells imposed on the company. Eisner may have been right about Wells's deficiencies as a business executive, and right to be incredulous that there was no penalty for Katzenberg quitting before the end of his contract. But that didn't change the contract. During the discovery process, it had become increasingly clear that Eisner's understanding about the bonus was untenable. The language of Katzenberg's contract, the history of the negotiations, and the extensive analysis contained in Project Snowball all supported Katzenberg's claim that he was entitled to a bonus. Although Eisner had always maintained he knew nothing of Project Snowball, the document itself had his initials typed on it, indicating he had received it. Moreover, Katzenberg's lawyers had subpoenaed all the notes taken by author Tony Schwartz for Eisner's autobiography, replete with unguarded and devastating evidence of Eisner's hostility toward Katzenberg. The concession that Eisner might have offered him Wells's job, his petulant outburst that he wouldn't pay him anything, not to mention plenty of indiscreet remarks about Ovitz and others still at Disney. Schwartz was horrified at having to turn over the notes, but he could not claim that Eisner had been a confidential source speaking to a journalist. Disney lawyers resisted the subpoena on his behalf, but the court ruled the notes had to be handed over. And Schwartz had to give a deposition in which he swore that the notes reflected a near-verbatim account of what Eisner had told him. Schwartz wished that he hadn't written so much down, especially things that he knew Eisner would never allow in the book. Yet he had no way of knowing it would come to this. As a result, it seemed incomprehensible that in the ensuing year and a half, having already conceded the key liability issue, Disney and Katzenberg could not settle the case. Katzenberg dreaded the thought that everything about his career at Disney would become public. He knew Disney lawyers would try to put his actions in the harshest possible light, suggesting that he had tried to capitalize first on Wells's death and then Eisner's heart attack to advance his own interests, not to mention revealing his compensation at Disney. For Disney, the stakes were even higher. By going to trial, Disney and Eisner risked all the negative publicity it had hoped to avoid, as well as an order to pay far more than it thought Katzenberg deserved. Yet Eisner remained intransigent. Since Katzenberg's acrimonious departure, their relationship had deteriorated, if such a thing were possible. Eisner blamed Katzenberg for the ruinous competition for animators from DreamWorks. Eisner